This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com. Tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit AnytimeFitness.com. to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. This is Larry Wilmore. You're listening to Black on the Air. It's good to be back. Missed last week. I was pretty busy last weekend at the launch of my new show, Peacock. And call Wilmore. So much fun, guys. I'm having a blast. You guys, download Peacock. If you are listening to my podcast, I need your support out there. Tell your friends. Tell them about my show. And watch the show. And I hope you enjoy it, too. I'm really proud of it. And it's different from what I'm doing on my podcast, which is nice. You know, it has some overlap where I feel like I'm talking to the audience directly. You know, the interviews are kind of short, and that can be frustrating. But it really is a lot of fun. We do a thing at the end, if you haven't seen it, called Lightning Round, where we have a lot of fun. We had Roy Wood on from The Daily Show this past week. He was hilarious. So I'm going to continue to do that. And it drops every Friday night on Peacock at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific is when it's first available. But you can watch it anytime. Some people have a little coffee in the morning, watch a little Wilmore. And Amber Ruffin, by the way, too. Amber Ruffin has a new late night show. Her started last night. She's amazing. She did a great job. So funny. So, you know, wake up in your Saturday mornings, have a little Amber and Larry with the coffee. You know, sounds good, guys. We got some good guests coming up on the show and some really good topics. I'll tell you, here's what I'm trying to do on my TV show. We only have a certain amount of time. We've got like 11 shows in 10 weeks, I think, something like that. It's crazy. And I'm definitely going to comment on the election, of course. That's the amount of time. But also, we're trying to comment on what's happening out in the culture. So we're trying to do both things, you know, within the episode. And many times what we'll do is we'll just take a topic and just do that episode about it. Like last week was voter suppression and voter depression. Talked about those two. This episode, this week, we're going to talk about police and what's going on with the relationship between police and Black community, which is a tough issue, you know. And of course, we're not going to be able to cover it in depth, but you know, we'll try to do at least from an interesting angle and see what we can do in it and that type of thing. But each week we want to have kind of a different topic, and sometimes it'll change depending on what's going on in the news. But you know, we're trying to pay attention to what's going on in the world and have you guys get not just my perspective, but you know, some of the guests, some of the people that are out there. So that's what we're trying to do. Having fun, having a good time. And I appreciate all the support you guys have given me. It means so much. You have to know that. People have watched the show and enjoyed it and tweeted about it, Facebooked about it, you know, Instagram about it, TikToked about it, whatever. Means a lot. So the more people watch it, you know, just the better it means. And who knows? Maybe we'll keep doing this afterwards. We'll see. Like I said, this week on my podcast, I have Bakari Sellers speaking to today. I spoke to him this morning a little while ago. Bakari is great. You've seen him on CNN. He's so great. And by the way, if you have not, he was on Bill Maher last night, or I should say Friday night, depending on where you're listening to this. You should catch that. It was really, he really mixed it up with the, I think Coleman Hughes is his name. He's a young journalist. Comes from a different point of view. And I thought it was good that you have Black people on a show who, you know, are coming at the same issue from different angles, you know, to show that we're not all monolithic. We don't all think the same. You know, we can be smart and have a respectful conversation and disagree, or, you know, have slight disagreements or big disagreements, whatever. But be sure to catch that. Bakari was great. And, you know, the big thing this week, well, one of the big things, man, so many things happens, you guys. It happens so fast, too. You know, the Breonna Taylor decision or non-decision, as you might say from the boxing world, was frustrating for a lot of people this week. People poured out into the streets. And I'll talk about that with Bakari coming up. So I'll cover that with him. And there's so much to cover on that. We just kind of touched the surface on it. And a lot of people are frustrated out there, rightly so. It's a tough issue. Man, I have to tell you, I feel so bad for that family, though. When you lose a daughter and that type of thing, it's just horrible. But that, the thing about the Breonna Taylor case, I will say this, it's almost emblematic of this quixotic problem, you know, that the Black community has with the police. It's fraught with so many traps and holes and procedure and these types of things. Many times they're not clear cut. And unfortunately, many times the procedures, the laws, the rules, the ordinances are just not on the side of the people who were harmed, you know, and that seems to be the case in this. And so when we're seeking or looking for justice, it's frustrating because many times the laws themselves aren't just. So you can't get justice within the existing laws. So how do you get justice? You know, you can try to change the laws, but it still doesn't feel good for the people who lost somebody. So that's a tough one. The other thing going on this week, Trump, of course, announced his Supreme Court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett. A lot of people on the left are very upset about this. How dare the Republicans be hypocrites? And they're right. How dare them? But Republicans say, fuck you. Of course we dare. We're in power. And they're right. They're right. That's the thing. It's so frustrating. I know when you're a Democrat, you're on the left. That Mitch McConnell's such a fucking asshole. He's such a fucking asshole, you guys. But he doesn't care. He doesn't care that we think he's an asshole. He plays the long game. And I talk about this. Please watch my show from last night on Peacock. My opening's all about this. This motherfucker does not care about your feelings. He doesn't. He wants to nominate judges and nominate judges he has. The dereliction of duty that Senate had when Obama was president and blocking all those judicial candidates. And we're not just talking about the Supreme Court. We're talking about the lower courts, the circuit courts, all the appellate courts. I mean, it's crazy the court packing that they did. And did it improperly, as far as I'm concerned, and didn't give a fuck at all. And these are ramifications. The problem with these type of ramifications, you know, with this pick, you're going to have a 6-3 conservative court. These ramifications, guys, they're going to last for decades. Decades with all these judges. It's just overwhelming. And it's so frustrating because, and this is the thing I talked about last night, is sometimes in elections, I feel like Democrats, sometimes we just focus on the things that aren't going to get us over the finish line. So many little things, we get distracted. And I feel like people on the right, I'll say conservatives, I won't say Republicans, but there are so many conservatives where judges has just been their issue for so long. And they're not fucking kidding around, you guys. And the issue really is abortion. It's other issues, but it really is abortion. I mean, it's the cultural left, as they call it in general, but it is abortion. Let's not fool ourselves. You know, since Roe v. Wade went down, they have not been kidding around. They have been waiting and waiting and waiting to try to get this type of majority in the courts, and it's happening. And when I think about all the discussions about Hillary in the last election, oh, you know, they're kind of the same, you know, doesn't matter. What's the difference between Trump and Hillary? Well, the difference is a 6-3 fucking court. Is that Hillary would have had those court picks over the last few years. You know, you wouldn't have Kavanaugh, you wouldn't have Gorsuch. You know, you wouldn't have this pick. You wouldn't be gutting Roe v. Wade. You wouldn't be ruining all the advances that women have had in just controlling their own fucking bodies over the past 40 years that, you know, this court is not going to carry back and is going to roll back. And some of those ramifications just don't have to do with abortion and ability to make that decision. They have to do with just basic fucking medical care for women, especially women of color, without means, you know, without the ability to pay for services, and who get caught in this ridiculous bureaucratic hole where people just go unserved. They just go unserved in a way that is criminal in our society. And because people are against one issue, they just don't give a fuck about this other shit. So we'll see. I'm probably being a little more negative than I normally am. It's Saturday morning, you know, so we'll see. So that's just me saying, guys, we got to get out and vote. We got to get this motherfucker out of the White House. He got to go. So that's what I'm going to be talking about over the next few weeks. And so, guys, so here's the deal. So my pod, I'm moving to Saturdays. I want people to expect getting it on Saturdays. You know, I can kind of look at the week in a different way, which is kind of nice. My guests have been real nice, been able to get people on Saturdays. Bakari, who was with his family, supported. It's so great. You could hear his dog and his kids and stuff in the background. He was great. So let's do this on Saturday mornings. You know, we'll just talk about the week and that kind of thing. But stick around. Right after this, we got a really good conversation with Bakari Sellers.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Okay, welcome back. Very happy to have this next guest. Actually was kind enough to help me kind of practice my new show, you guys. Really nice guy, but also one of the best voices to hear out in the wilderness these days. You've seen him as a CNN contributor. He has his own podcast, by the way, so don't miss the Bakari Sellers podcast. But he's also the author of My Vanishing Country. Bakari Sellers, welcome to Black on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an awesome experience to be on your show. I've done two Larry Wilmore shows in like 7-10 days. That has to be a record. I appreciate
What's up with that? I know. It's like, how come I haven't had Bakari on a long time ago? You know, but I know how busy you are, and you've got your fingers on a lot of things right now, which is cool. We need voices like you out there. So we're recording this on a Saturday mornings now. I kind of, now that I'm doing my show, I'm moving to that. And I happened to catch you on Bill Maher last night. I thought you did a great job, as you always do. Yeah. You know, we were talking about how Bill is, he can be very divisive, but I have to give him credit for last night, because he's, you know, he devoted a lot of that time to Black issues out there, you know. And
it was, even with Belushi, they had a conversation about the war on drugs, but having myself and Coleman Hughes is a, I didn't know, he's only 24 years old. He's a brilliant guy at the Manhattan Institute. Yeah. He just comes from a different perspective on the issues of race. Sure. And I tell people all the time, you know, Black folk, we're not all monolithic, right?
That's right.
We all think differently. I do think when he gets, and I don't want to sound condescending, but I do think that when life experiences sometimes catch up to you, some of those views will mature and change, certainly.
Yeah, I know you're talking about them, but the expression I say is like, well, you're a researcher, but I'm a witness. So we have kind of a different perspective on this. It's like,
it's like someone talking to you. They're like, yeah, you know, racism is not really a thing. It's all in our head. And I'm like, okay, tell me what that data says. And I'm going to tell you that here I am. My wife almost died last year giving birth to twins. She's a Black woman. And we know that Black women are three to four times more likely to die during childbirth. So like, tell me again what your statistics say. You're a researcher and I'm a witness, right? Yeah. So So it was a good, healthy dialogue, and people are having these discussions about race, and they're having them more and more in the open. So, you know, it is what it is.
I think it's great that it's nuanced, and I agree with you. Because many, it's easy to dismiss Black people as monolithic and we have the same views. And it's not just Coleman being young. There are many older Blacks that have a different perspective because they've been through a whole lot too that has been different, right?
I mean, you have an entire generation. I was supporting Kamala Harris, and I was like, you know, everybody's not going to be with Joe Biden. And then my mama and all her friends were like, nah, we with Joe. We appreciate this. We know how hard we have a trust.
Absolutely.
There. We know how hard these rights were to win. We're not going to risk it on an unknown quantity. So here we are. But you're right. And having you back and having your show back actually adds, it's a great deal of value, especially. I mean, it's the perfect time for your voice we have to have more Black people being unapologetic and speaking their truth.
Definitely. I remember writing an article about Ali when he passed away. It was for Time Magazine, actually, and I talked about his unapologetic Blackness and what it meant to me as a kid, you know, to hear unapologetic Blackness from somebody when that never occurred in the media at that time. To me, it was one of the most powerful things about Ali as a public entity, mm-hmm. you know. Because he was a sports figure, you know, and that is the biggest effect that man had on my life, you know, besides, God, I'm getting emotional now because I'm thinking of how much that meant to me, Bakari, because Bakari, people don't understand, there was a dearth of that in the media, you know, people being able to embrace Blackness. And I liked what you said last night. You were making a point. It kind of got talked over when they were talking about colorblindness Yeah, in the abstract, all of that stuff is great. In the abstract. But in the real world, you know, Blackness is a quantity that needs to be valued because it's been... And the reason why... And the reason why is because it's been devalued. We're not at the point where we can have it doesn't matter. No, niggas, it has mattered for so long, right?
Exactly. That's exactly, that was my point. And I was like, colorblindness is bullshit. It's like a cop-out. I don't see rays. What are you talking about? I'm right here.
Yeah.
You start waving at people.
Hello. Like.
But no, and Bill's unique. And you know, as we were talking about earlier, people watch Bill to either hate him or they watch him because they love him.
Yeah, they like to take sides.
And so it's a good show. And I think that you probably have a good bit of viewers like that too, who either love you or hate you. I don't know anybody lukewarm about Larry.
Okay. And by the way, when I did the correspondence dinner, a lot of Black people did not like the fact that I said my nigga to Obama, you know, especially the older generation.
I remember that.
The older generation was not having that, you know. But the younger generation was like, that is the Blackest thing I've ever seen. Because they understood I was having a private moment with them. Because let's be honest, Bakari, if we're in the barbershop and Obama's in there and somebody said, my nigga, nobody would have a problem with that, you know.
Nah, because Barack would be like, what's up, my nigga?
Exactly. That's exactly. I just decided to do it in front of white people. That was the issue.
And they were hella uncomfortable. I remember
that. Exactly.
No, I remember that. You did make one. Didn't you make a joke about Wolf? I think CNN still probably hit.
It was kind of unfortunate.
They still hate you for that joke.
It's unfortunate because I was trying to make a sarcastic joke, but it just didn't come out right.
It didn't land though. It was
no, it didn't land. And I like Wolf. He's a good guy. You know, I didn't mean that. You know, it's too bad that they actually hate me for that.
You can't go after Wolf. Wolf is actually the nicest. I actually laughed.
He is.
And Wolf laughed at it too. You know,
no, Wolf is
he's
great
the nicest
guy.
Person. Yeah, he's the nicest person.
I should
person
send him a note because I hate that thing is out there because he really is. He does a yeoman job. You know, he's a great guy.
You should invite him to come on your show. I don't know.
Do you think he would?
I don't think he would either, but you should invite him at least. That would at least start the conversation.
I should start the conversation because he is. I hate that the sarcastic way I meant that joke got lost. And it just tumbled. Here's what happened. Because it happens in real time. Bakari.
How do you prepare for that? So let's back up. How do you prepare? I just had Steve Harvey on my show recently. And I said, Steve, do you miss stand-up? And and although you were, it was a roasting, hosting thing, it was still, you still had the elements of stand-up.
Right, Steve
said, I missed the audience laughing. Yeah. He's like, I don't miss the 2 hours before almost being about to throw up, nervous, going through that in my head. How do you prepare for that moment, man? It was such an amazing moment for you to be in, and you were so good at it.
It's tough because, you know, it's not a normal type of audience. So you kind of have to choose what approach you're going to do. And I chose to do it as a roast, but I guess people weren't prepared for a roast, you know? And in a roast, you kind of...
Roast everybody.
I made sure that I got everybody, not just I'm up there like roasting Fox News or that type of thing, you know, and... So, you know, who knows? You don't have a chance to really try it out. So some of it didn't land, of course, but that's fine. As a comedian, you don't care about that. You know, you hope that some big ones do land. But I always felt bad about the Wolf thing. And I've never really talked about it because Wolf's not a bad guy. And the way the joke came out.
What did you call it? You called him a drone, I think, right? I'm trying to remember.
Speaking of drones.
Exactly. I was almost drunk when you were up there. I was on the verge of. So I was like, let me remember.
I know. And the thing is, I remember the room turned to me a little bit before that, but that really turned the room and I never got them back. I got some laughs here and there.
You didn't get the room, but we had this discussion. I believe me and Don Lemon had this discussion. We were like, he didn't get the room, but everybody who watched that thing loved it.
Yeah, different. Yeah,
it was totally different.
Yeah. People told me, and I disagreed with them. They were like, yeah, I like what you said about Wolf. And I was like, guys, but I didn't mean it like that. You know, it's like, I don't dislike Wolf. He's a good reporter. I was being sarcastic. I wanted to make a point about follow-up questions because we were having a discussion about that. But anyhow, it's one of those things that gets lost in the roasting of people, you know. And even with Obama, you know, when I said the drones line, the line that you're talking about, was that he and Steph Curry had a lot of things in common. They like to, you know, drop bombs from far outside. You know? Yeah. And Obama kind of looked like, ooh. And I was like, what? Am I wrong?
they don't call you a drone president for no reason. You do know they talk about you behind your back, don't you?
I know. But you run the risk. Look, part of that, like when you tell me that CNN hates me, like that doesn't hurt my feelings. That's fine.
I'm being overgeneralized, but I am saying that, you know, it's part of the process.
Yeah. I should. You're absolutely right about that because he's a really a great man. And so I do not mean that. But I remember talking to Don Lemon afterwards, and Don was a great sport about it, by the way.
Oh, Don, yeah.
Yeah, because he flipped me off and everything, and it was fun, the back and forth, you know, because, yeah, you don't mean those things and that type of thing. But anyhow, I digress. I did want to get your take being a member of the media and covering this stuff in detail. What were your thoughts on this Breonna Taylor decision this week? Did you have any observations?
Daniel Cameron is a coward. And one of the unique things...
The Attorney General of Kentucky.
One of the unique things that he gave away, and I'm not sure he meant to give it away when he was speaking, was that he said that he made the decision that these officers did not commit the crime of murder or manslaughter. Mm-hmm. That was not a decision for him to make. And so when he went to the grand jury, he didn't even give the grand jury the option to come back with charges for murder or manslaughter. And so he made that decision himself. I mean, there were 12 witnesses.
That was a unilateral decision.
That was a unilateral decision. It's not as if the grand jury came back with a no bill. That was a unilateral decision on his part. Mm-hmm. And he rested the case. Pardon me for getting too much in the weeds.
There are two
inconsistencies with what lies. I hate when people sugarcoat it, but there are two lies that Cameron told, which are concerning. The first is that the police shouted out police. And said it wasn't a no-knock warrant. They had 12 witnesses. Only one witness says that they heard the police say, police, like, we're here. They interviewed her 3 times, though, before she said that.
Yeah.
That one witness. That's enough indecisiveness to put it before a jury. That's enough to bring back charges, right? So that's
And
first.
I'm confused, Bakari. I heard it was a no-knock warrant, but then they also announced themselves. I'm confused at
that.
Or am I getting that wrong?
You are So what they're saying, what Daniel Cameron is saying, is that it was not a no-knock warrant.
It was not a no-knock
because
warrant.
Because they announced themselves.
Wait, so that means after the fact? Or like, what was the actual warrant that they were issued? That's what
So a no-knock warrant is a tactic that's used, right? When you are serving a warrant. And mm-hmm. so it should be banned regardless. But basically what happens is... you literally don't knock. Like, you just show up mm-hmm. at 4 o'clock in the morning, you hit them with the RAM, whatever, you go in, which in this case would have probably proven for charges of a negligent murder or a negligent mm-hmm. homicide, which would be a manslaughter charge. In this case, though, they said that they followed the rule because one of the 12 witnesses on their third interview heard one officer at one time say police, mm-hmm. which is bullshit. So that's first. The second thing is this. The young man, her boyfriend, fired a shot. He admits that. Everybody admits that. The problem they have is that the bullet that hit the officer does not match the round that would come from Breonna Taylor's boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And it's inconclusive that it came from his gun. So everybody knows that he was likely shot by another officer that night. Mm-hmm.
Although even if he wasn't, if... someone shot, they would still be shooting back, even if the officer wasn't
him. They would still be. They would still be shooting. They would still be shooting back. That's a legitimate point.
Right.
However, the escalation of "I was shot, therefore firing" is just not that narrative is just not true. Mm-hmm. I guess the biggest tragedy is that of all the charges that were brought, the wanton disregard. I think, you know, in this case, he was charged for. If he would have hit Breonna Taylor, he would have not been charged. That's how patently absurd this case was. Mm-hmm. The officer, Brett Hankinson, was charged and arrested because he fired shots into the wall of the apartment next door.
Right.
If those bullets would have gone into Breonna Taylor, he would not have faced any charges at all. He was literally charged because he missed.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about how absurd that is.
No, it's crazy. But why... are the bullets that went into her now? What is the word wanton?
That's a good question.
Yo, I mean, because that's the same thing, right? I mean, it's not the same thing going to a person, but it's the same legal thing, right? That the bullets went to
it's the same intent or shared intent. I agree mm-hmm. with you. I agree at bare minimum. I mean, I think you give a jury murder charges, no jury's going to come back with murder on
no,
that, but they would
I don't
come
think
back
so.
With, they would come back with manslaughter, truly. Mm hmm. You go into the wrong house, you go in negligently, you go in just firing all willy-nilly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a tragedy all around. I feel really bad for her family.
I feel bad for family. Yeah, I really do. Me too.
I mean, it's just horrible. It's a horrible situation.
You said something last night also that I thought was true. These aren't the exact words, but you were basically pointing out how the system worked exactly the way it was meant to.
It did. Right. Yeah, and that's my right? point. I was
and
like,
that's,
yeah.
That's devastating, you know, to think that because you're right. It's set up in a certain way to work out like that as opposed to protect this type. It's not set up to protect this type of accident. Let's call it an accident. You know, this type of accident. It's set up to protect the person doing the shooting, the police
right.
officer.
It's very right? hard. The system is set up to have no accountability, to exonerate mm-hmm. law enforcement, which it did. And I think that although the system's set up that way, I think that Daniel Cameron went out of his way, truly out of his way, to extend an olive branch to law enforcement in this case. Mm-hmm. Now, would they have been found guilty is a whole nother thing, right? But to make a unilateral decision is like, there would have been no downside to him saying, this needs to be heard by a jury. This is our mm-hmm. system. But he didn't even present that.
It's been so hard to get information on this case. This is... one of those things that, because this happened in March, I think.
Correct.
And I, for the for
the
life
wasn't fired
of me,
until June.
This and for crazy. The life of me, I couldn't get any information. Like, well, what's the sequence of events? Like, you know, what exactly happened? What does the place look like? You know, what is this inside of the apartment look like? Like, how small is this space? You know, what's the possibility of this happening? Like, are those high probabilities? Like, did they... like when you say they not like, you know what I mean? These are important questions. Like when they, did they knock down the front door? Did they bust through it? And then did they bust through a bedroom door also? Like, were there two doors that were busted through?
The best response to your questions And I think where whenever you give your next public, monologue, it should ask Daniel Cameron to just make everything public, to be transparent. I mean, why not? I mean, he refuses to. But these are questions that everyone has. You're not asking questions make no sense. But I think the public demands that level of accountability. Give us the grand jury minutes. Open up the. I mean, it's over now. I mean, it's. I mean, you have somebody charged with shooting into a wall. The wall got more justice, right? So that's where I stand on this. A direct ask. I'm asking people to make a direct ask for the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky to make everything public.
Even if it is made public, though, can there ever be what maybe, I can't speak for the family, but maybe what the family might be considered justice in this? Maybe, probably not, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's still one more arrow in their quiver. I hate that term, but they still have the federal government, the FBI, still reviewing the actual issuance of the warrant. And, you know, they walked into a house looking for guns and money and drugs and stuff. And the man was a rightful gun owner. They ain't had no money and they didn't have no drugs. Mm-hmm. And his 911 tape is heartbreaking. I mean,
I know.
If you just listen to his 911 tape, he's like, they just came in and started shooting my girlfriend. I don't know what's happening. Like, no, I don't know who this is. So for someone to yell police and then for the immediate reaction, I mean, that's what a jury would hear. And a jury would be like, nah, I don't believe you said police, because all you got to do is listen to this tape. This man ain't say the police came knocking. This man just said y'all busted in his house. You would say on a 911 tape, the police just shot my wife.
But also, it's one thing to say that they said police, but isn't there an argument to be heard? Even if you said that, that doesn't mean the person heard it.
Correct. And you're whispering, police, that don't work, right? Like, it'll be like,
police, open up. Police, open up.
And just ramming it. I mean, but like you.
The ramming probably woke you up, not the police.
Oh, and they only hit one time now. So it ain't like they hit back. Like, your door ain't built for those things.
Right.
It'll start, you'll shoot too. I mean, He said legitimately, and the man is like, whatever. He's like, man, I got a criminal history, man. I sell dope, right? You know, he actually didn't have that much of a criminal history, but he might have been a part of some things going around. But, you know, he was like, even he thought that her ex-boyfriend was the one beating down the door and coming in, you know. Right. That's why he shot. And they charged him.
And where's the NRA, by the way? With someone standing their ground and protecting themselves with the gun in their own castle. What about castle rules and castle laws? You know?
Man, the NRA is just, the NRA is in shambles. That black woman from New York has taken apart the NRA. They probably will not be heard from ever again.
Yeah.
Not resign. They still, the problem with the NRA is they're still waiting on Barack Obama to take everybody's guns. That was not a good strategy.
Or maybe he took them and he's got them in a cache somewhere. They want to get them back, right? I know, that was such bullshit. Yeah. Let's look at this in a little bigger picture. What do you think, Bakari, just from what you've seen? Because, and I know this is a tough question to answer, but what do you think is the biggest problem, or let's say problems, in that black police relationship? And I've always said that I think people misconstrue it as white police against black people.
No.
I always said it's blue versus black. You know?
It is. It's a system. So even black people, I mean, all you gotta do is
there's black people in the system.
Yeah. I mean, look at Daniel Cameron. I mean, what are you talking? I mean, Daniel Cameron is a part of a system of white supremacy, right? I mean, you don't have to be white to be a part of.
But there are people who aren't Daniel Cameron that are not partisan in that way in many jurisdictions, and these things are happening.
Look at the officers who killed George Floyd. You got one Asian guy, you got one black guy.
That's what I mean.
You are right. And I think we articulate those examples because I think that you're absolutely correct. It's systemic. One of the things I want people to know, though, is that while I don't believe that they would have shot a white girl named Becky, you know, I don't think they would have run up in her house in the middle of the night, right, and shot at him 20 times. Even if they did, though, Becky would have got justice, right? The accountability is the accountability portion of this is what bothers me. And they're not being accountability or justice for people of color. There not being systems in place to prevent this from happening. Yeah. They're not adequate deterrences. You know, you can get fired from one jurisdiction like Brett Hankinson did. You know, Brett was fired from Lexington. He was fired from the Lexington County, Lexington Police Force to go to Louisville and be a police officer. There's no database. You know, there's no use of force or standardized use of force. And, you know, all of these officers, just think about this. Qualified immunity is so important, but most people don't know what it means. Mm-hmm. Qualified immunity is that there is an officer, right now, I'm sure, that has probably killed two people and at least beat four people's ass, right? Those six individuals, though, he didn't lose a pension. He didn't lose a dollar. And although it may not rise to the standard of criminality, probably did, but may not, the cities and the counties and the states pay those settlements. So there's no deterrent for him to go out and do it again. Mm-hmm. Like if you had to think about whether or not you were going to lose your pension when you beat somebody's ass, you may make a better decision, I think. Mm-hmm. So that's what qualified immunity is. It's the fact that they can hide behind their shield of immunity without any reservation.
How much of a problem do you think the police unions are in this? Because I feel like they're not talked about as much as individual officers are talked about. And I think that kind of doesn't give us a proper view of where this is when we talk about systemic problems. Oh, you know,
the police unions in this are just horrible. Mm-hmm. You have certain states that if you are involved in a deadly use of force, you know, you can't be interviewed for 30 days.
Wow. That's crazy. Like, you can't even be interviewed about, you could, oh my, just think about the ramifications of that. 30 days before you're interviewed.
Correct. Like, because of the police.
Let me tell you guys what happened. I'll talk to you in a month.
Yeah, I see. Let me get my thoughts together. I'll be back.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, you would have had time to see all the evidence and be able to report your story. Yeah, I mean, so the police unions have done a lot of damage, a ton of damage. And many times politically, they are one of the largest forces we have out there, one of the largest special interests that we have out there.
Mm-hmm. I remember Mara was saying that he thinks it's more of a protect the police thing out there than against blacks.
I wouldn't doubt that. I mean, it's still a bad system. Like I tell people all the time, black folk don't want fewer police. We just want better police.
Yeah. Like, absolutely.
We just want people who, you know, and the first time we see police, we don't want it to be when there is a notion of criminality. Why is the first time I meet the police who are patrolling my neighborhood when there's a crime? Like, I should know these people, right? Like, they should be a part of the fabric of your community, which isn't the case.
Are we getting mixed messages now? Because in a lot of the defund the police energy, I'll say some of the energy is very anti-police. And I understand where that emotion is coming from, you know.
I just think, first of all, defund the police is a fucking horrible marketing strategy. Right?
Yes, it is. I've made jokes about that. it really is.
It's like, you should
anytime you have a slogan where you're constantly explaining what it is, means maybe it's not you should change the slogan.
It's not working. Because then you have people like me who are like, that's not what they mean. Like, it's not like when you dial 911, the police aren't going to show up. Right. But
like Frosted Flakes used to be called Sugar Frosted Flakes, but they constantly had to say, it doesn't have that much sugar, you guys, even though it did. And so they just changed it to Frosted Flakes. It still has the same amount of sugar in it, but now people are just buying Frosted Flakes. Yeah,
I didn't know that. But
yeah, it was Sugar Frosted Flakes. Yeah.
This is probably a worse name than Sugar Frosted Flakes.
That's my point. You did not know that. That's my point.
I had no idea. I didn't know that, like, didn't they used to make Coca-Cola with real cocaine or something? Wasn't that
when it first started, yeah. Absolutely. Well, hence crazy. The Coca-Cola, yeah. It's the pause that refreshes.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, my dad used to tell me that. I was like, what?
Those are the days, man. Yeah.
Go get you a Coca. You really would be. You'd be high off life, truly. No, exactly. But defund the police is a horrible name. But, and, you know, when people say abolish the police, I'm like, that's stupid. But
there's abolitionists out there. That's a movement too.
That is a movement too. But I think reimagining the way that we police, most law enforcement officers, like, you know, they're like, man, 40% of the 50% of the calls, I don't even need to be, they don't need a police officer.
Right.
They need a mental health professional or You know, I'm going out there and a wife and a husband are arguing with each other, man. They need a therapist. They don't need me.
That's a fact.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that there's so many other ways. There's so many, if you don't want kids committing crimes or trespassing and loitering, the police don't need, you know, drones or tanks. I mean, why don't you build a community center with that? You know, so those are the things that we're talking about.
Yeah. Where do we put, this is a tough one for me. And I know you think about this too. When we think about the violence that's happening in our communities from criminals, you know, like here's the term that I hate, Bakari, black on black crime.
That's not, I hate a that. Thing.
Well, I don't like the term because like, it's just too general. Do you think like black lawyers and doctors are just going around shooting people because it's black on black crime? You know, it's like with the crime that people are talking about is criminal. It's criminal behavior that's going on, usually by gang members and that sort of thing. But it's not black behavior. People act like it's black behavior that's going on there.
Right. So it's a deeply racist trope, right? Black on black crime is a myth. Let me tell you why it's a myth. Because people, we're deeply segregated in this country. Over 80-90% of the murders committed against white people are committed by other white people. Why? Mm-hmm. Because we're deeply segregated. And, right. you know, you commit crimes against the group of people that you're with. Mm-hmm. What do you call a crime when a white person, what do you call it when a white person shoots another white person? You call it crime, right? Mm-hmm. So when a black person shoots a black person, it's not called black on black crime. It's literally called crime. That's right. it. But they use black on black crime to make us hyper toxic, hyper aggressive, hyper violent, mm-hmm. to say that we just have this greater propensity to kill one another. And I'm like, no, that's not the case at all. We just live in segregated communities. So black folk are more likely to kill another black person, just like a white person is more likely to kill another white person. But it's just called crime. So let's stop making it out to be something that it isn't. And that's where we are.
Also, you know, if people point to the numbers, well, the problem really goes back decades of some of these neighborhoods that have had these problems because of, you know, the nature of some of these concentrated urban areas where, you know, there's a lot of blight and these sort of things. You know, there's a lot of issues around why those numbers are so high and why a lot of these issues have been ignored for so long, Bakari, you know, and so much neglect that has been in those areas. People forget that 911 as a joke was about the police not showing up.
Not showing up. That's right.
That's what 911 as a joke was about. That, you know, we always felt left out in this, you know, in the police coming to our aid equation, you know, which is kind of ironic that people think that we want to get rid of the police presence. It's always been the other way around.
Hesitancy. Yeah. You have these people, you've seen the clips where people, I can't remember where it was in California somewhere, and they call the store owner, they were looting, and they call the police, and the police come and arrest the black folk.
Oh, I saw that, yeah. That's great.
And they were like, nah, we own the store. Like, they were not the looters. We literally own the store. And so, you know, I'm tired of people saying we just need more training, because that's not the case. I mean, we need a lot. We need to reimagine the entire system.
What is the biggest thing that needs to be reimagined? Because there's still going to be these types of interactions. Like, for instance, when someone says, well, we need to send a mental health thing, all that is good, but it doesn't change like what's going to happen with George Floyd. You know, they were called on a counterfeiting thing that the police are coming for that, you know?
Yeah. And it was a fake $20 bill. I know. I saw like,
yeah, exactly. Like, that's not going to be a mental health official.
No, I think that you have to, there are a few things. I think that you have to ban no knock warrants. I think you have to ban chokeholds. I think mm-hmm. that you have to limit qualified immunity. I think that you have to have a national, standardized database for use of force, so people mm-hmm. know what law enforcement officers are taught and how they're taught to interact with us. And you need a national database for misconduct. So if you commit a crime or you're a bad apple in one district, you can't go be in a whole another bad apple in another district or city. So those are just some concrete things we can do. The weird part about it is like Eric Garner was choked to death, right? Mm-hmm. And they couldn't even bring federal charges against him. And the chokehold in New York City has been banned since like 1991-92.
Right.
And so when you think about the fact, they're like, we know we have it banned, but the accountability part is so flawed.
Exactly. You know, and, oh God, this just seems like a circular type of thing, too.
So, don't worry. We'll be having the same discussion in like 3 months. We'll be like, did we just talk about this?
It's so frustrating. How long do you think the protests are going to continue? Do you think they're going to continue through the election? Do you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Do you feel any protest fatigue out there by people at all? Or what do you think from a media perspective?
So is there fatigue? Yeah. I mean, there's always fatigue because people have other shit going on in their lives, right? Mm-hmm. So they're like, we're trying to make it through. You know, I was all Black Lives Matter, but I got other stuff going on. Right. The Montgomery, I was
trying to... But now football's back. I can't be... You know.
I know, as you hear my 4.5-pound Yorkie going crazy in the background. Yeah. The Montgomery bus boycott, I was trying to figure out how many days it lasted.
Yeah. It lasted a while. That was during the winter, too, and that was really tough on people, that Montgomery.
But the Montgomery bus boycott, it literally lasted over 365 days. So people are like, are we done protesting? No, but it's like every 3 months they shoot somebody else. So, like, what do we... Do you know how many people have been killed by law enforcement in the last 365 days?
I don't even want to guess.
1,010. 1,010 people have been killed by law enforcement. And
is there a distinction between the nature of those killing, where they're like... Because a lot of times we say against unarmed people, but what are...
Do some of them belong dead? The answer to that is probably yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that all of those are not bad shots.
Okay.
But by comparison to other countries, I mean, we're talking about... I mean, we have fundamental issues in our country.
I was going to say, I mean, not to make light of it, but we have a lot of bad people in this country.
Yeah, no, I'm like, some of do they all belong to be DED, dead, as they say? Yes, some of them are. But what we do know is that that's a whole hell of a lot of people that law enforcement have killed. That means we have a drug problem in this country. We got too many guns on the streets.
How many people are killed by criminals?
I don't know. That's a good question. The Washington Post doesn't give you that. How many murders have we had? I mean, we probably had more than that in Chicago. Where are you? Are you in Chicago now?
No, I'm in Los Angeles, Pasadena.
Oh, great.
My family's from Chicago. They're from Evanston.
I can tell by how good you look right now. Your skin looks really good. I can tell you're in LA.
I don't know about that. We've had all these fires here and everything, so we haven't had much sun lately. But my family's from Chicago. I'm very much aware of the violence that's happening in Chicago. My parents grew up there. You know, that city has always been segregated, by the way. There's always been issues there, you know. How many actual homicides?
I was like, I don't know the answer to that. That's a really good question. But I do know that law enforcement has killed 2 times more Black individuals in the last decade, which is the trend, than white individuals. And 3.5, Black men are 3.5 times more likely to be killed by law enforcement than white men. Mm.
What's going on, Bakari? Our country's so divided right now in so many ways. And from a media perspective, is it like, to me, when I look at this, because I try to get information from as many different places as I can. And for me, part of it is not so much that it's to be informed. Part of it is, but I want to see how people are shaping narratives, you know, and because it kind of is what I do, is I comment on that type of thing as well, you know.
Do you comment on people shaping narratives, or do you shape narratives?
Well, I guess arguably you could say both, I guess. But I think I did more of the commenting on it before, I guess I should say, you know. But it's shocking to me how different the narratives are in this country. Not just that people are divided, but the narratives are so different.
So what I did was when I taught at the University of Chicago, I taught one semester there in David Axelrod's Institute of Politics. Mm-hmm. I gave my students an assignment, which is one of the best assignments I've ever taken part of. Mm-hmm. For 1 week, they had to watch Fox and Friends.
Yeah.
The next week, they had to watch CNN New Day. And the next week, they had to watch Morning Joe.
Yeah. I love that. I love it already.
Yeah. I call my students at the University of Chicago my Range Rover babies. When they watched Fox and Friends, they were like, what? Like, what? What? You know, to use a very Negro colloquialism, where they do that at? That's basically what they were... What they were saying.
We got some preciousness coming on screen.
I know. Say, hey, Uncle Larry.
Oh, look at that one.
This is Stokely.
Hey, look at that. That is some activist blood in there. How you doing, Stokely? Aren't you cute?
Say hello.
For those of you that can't see, there's the cutest little kid with the pacifier in his mouth who has to get on daddy's lap right now because that's how it works.
That's how it works. They don't care. He likes the camera. I don't know where he got that from.
He's very. How old is he? Two?
Yeah, they're 22 months. As he slaps daddy and runs away.
I think that was a pretty good guess.
21 months. 21 months.
Yeah.
As my wife is yelling at me in the background.
Yes, that's hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cute kids, but we were talking about, how they were watching Fox and Friends.
Oh, they were like, where do you do that at? So it's a good social experiment. Everybody needs to. I think so too.
I agree with that completely.
Yeah, Fox and Friends is special TV, man. I don't know what they're talking about. I watch it every now and then. It's just, the narratives, as you say, are so.
Yeah, it's completely different. It's completely different, Bakari. And it's shocking how different it is. And both all these experiences for the people who are in it are completely authentic.
Are they though?
Yes. No, I have this argument with my liberal friends all the time. You know, I'm like, guys, you have to take people for what they, for their own experiences being authentic for them. Yeah. It is. They're not disingenuous. You have bullshit hypocritical people on both sides, but the majority of people, like people would tell me, Larry, how come people voted for Bush and it's against their interests? I said, because they like him. That's who they wanted to vote for. They weren't tricked into it.
That's true.
You think they were tricked into that? No. That's exactly who they wanted to vote
for. We just did a clip of a rally in Nevada with Donald Trump, and there was a black guy going to a Trump rally. He said, I want to be here. They were like, you're not concerned about not having a mask on? He was like, what? No. This is outside in the sun, and we all know the sun kills the virus. I said, oh, they all about to have COVID. I mean, it's a sad commentary, but that's.
Yeah. I think your network last night did the story where they showed the guy who had seen the clip that was the fake clip that I got fooled by actually first too, where it was supposed to be Biden who was asleep during the interview, but it was Harry Belafonte. Once I saw it, I kind of remembered, that going around when it initially
happened.
Harry
Belafonte felt completely asleep.
Yes, exactly, which is awesome. He's the king. He can sleep when he wants to. But this guy, even after having seen the actual thing, just said, well, it's probably something he would have done anyway. It didn't make a difference. It did not make a difference. You know, the entrenchment that people had. And this truly is a both sides thing. It truly is,
Yeah, it is.
You know.
And they play by a different set of rules. They are more.
Of course they do. Because they're different sides, yeah.
Yeah, but they, I don't even know if they got rules. Democrats are just such bedwetters and just lack the courage and always it's funny, like on the courts, we're like, just 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, back in 2016, you said this, they don't care, right?
No, I talked about this in my opening last night, I talked about that power. Exact thing.
They just want power.
Completely.
They don't
Absolutely.
Care.
Absolutely.
Like, what are we talking about? And everybody's like, everybody wants to ask me, Bakari, what do we do if he doesn't leave? I'm like, that's the wrong question. Like, don't you know you have to beat him before he even has to consider leaving?
That's exactly right. People are focusing on the wrong issue. What do you mean if he doesn't leave? People said this last time. Will Trump accept the election results? It's like, motherfucker, will you accept the election results if people vote for him? That's a tougher question. Will you accept the election results?
What are you going to do when you lose the Electoral College, right? So,
as Sean Connery said, what are you prepared to do? I mean, that is a more interesting question,
Yeah, Democrats are funny creatures because we always are asking the wrong questions at the wrong time.
At the wrong time. I agree with that. Here's an interesting question. I haven't seen this question asked too much, but I think it's kind of, we're in an interesting moment right now. Some of it, it's a larger question about, I thought of it last night when they had Coleman on, that there is a youth black conservative movement that's kind of out there. Some of it is represented by extreme voices like Candace Owens, who's kind of her own type of thing. Yeah. But some of it is a little more thoughtful and is actually a little more grounded in just, let's say, traditional conservative philosophy more than Trumpism. I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt right now,
No, there are some. I mean, I have a good friend, Sir Michael Singleton, who's like that. He's, you have a few people who, even Jerron Smith, who actually is the black Republican in the Trump White House, they are more just black. K. Cole James, they're just black conservatives. They're not
right.
Right. They don't ascribe to the racism that Trump brings to the party.
Sure, exactly. But howsoever, there's another thing that's going on besides that, okay? Because that's been around for a while. It just sometimes it gets more attention or less. Like there's always been that lane, right?
Right.
But Trump, I think, is actually, he's pulling in some blacks, and it's mainly black men, in a completely different lane. And I'm trying to figure this out. Like, and he's actually trying to make a, he released something today, I think, as his kind of carrot to black people or whatever.
The black platinum, the platinum plan. That's what it's called.
Like he's going to give us Escalades or something like that.
No, I was like, yeah. So how many dances when I go to the back with this plan? How many songs do nice. I get with this?
I was like, I know exactly the reference.
Like,
she's
like, do I get a bottle right. with sparklers? I mean,
does going to the polls take on a different meaning?
By the way, have you seen, since we're on a random tangent, have you seen Take Your Booty to the Polls?
I saw that. I just saw that yesterday. That's fantastic.
It was one of the best PSAs I've ever seen. And somebody was like, man, can't believe the Democrats are doing this. I was like, we're not that creative. This was Atlanta. This was, I wish Democrats were doing ads that right. people would actually talk about, but.
Hey, canvassing, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Now you were talking about.
You can't spell canvas without ass is what I always like to say.
Well, I've never heard that one, but it's accurate. You were talking about black conservatism and he's making a direct ploy for black men, but he doesn't want black men to vote for him. Like it's a
unique thing. Well, I think he does. No. I think he wants black men to vote for him.
No, I think it's more of a suppression tool. So what he wants to do is
he doesn't want liberal black men to vote.
I think he wants people to think that this is a lesser of two evils. So, and one of the things I remind my Democrats is that this isn't just an election between Trump and Biden. This is Trump, Biden, and the couch, right? And the couch is going to get a whole hell of a lot of votes. Yeah. And Donald Trump will take everybody who doesn't participate in the process as a vote for him.
But also, let's remember who we're dealing with here. This man is the narcissist of narcissists. He absolutely wants black votes. Are you kidding me?
Well,
he wants to fill his cup and have it overfloweth so he can brag about it.
But the people who are running his campaign know that the reason they're doing this is to cause that level of chaos and confusion. But they can only do it with one group of people. And that's
I would say
men.
That is a very cynical way of looking at it. I do think that he feels he can make an inroad here. And I think it's something to be reckoned with.
I agree with that.
Like, because here, let me put it from this standpoint, because there are people who aren't, I call them not high information. And but when I mean high information voter, I mean they're too busy working, they're taking care of their family, taking care of the kids. They hear about things, but they're not really political people. They'd much rather, when they watch television, they want an escape from all that crap, right? And I think there are people like this. I don't want to say in the middle, because that's not the proper way to describe them. It's more like sometimes they're gettable if they feel like someone is speaking to them directly and is offering them a practical way to improve their lives. Let's put it in those words.
You are saying something that I've been saying to the Biden campaign forever, especially with black men. You have to treat black men like a swing voter.
For far too long,
we have not messaged to black men. We haven't listened to black men. And so what Donald Trump did in 2016, he got 13% of black men to vote for him. That's extremely high. I don't think that'll happen again.
Absolutely, it's high.
But it's high. Like, you got to realize that only 4% of black women voted for Donald Trump. Those numbers are ridiculously insane. Yeah. But he spoke to him. He messaged to him.
Yes.
The more important number, though, to my point that I was trying to make earlier, is that there were 4.4 million people who voted for Barack Obama in 2012 who didn't vote for Hillary Clinton in 2016. Right. Of those 4.4 million people, over one third were black. So you're talking about 1.6 million people who were black who didn't show up. Yeah. The overwhelming majority are men, right? And so we've been doing shop talks, man. I did an event with Jermaine Dupri and Terrence J. Recently did an event with Young Jeezy. People are trying to make these overtures, particularly to black men, because at the end of the day, black and brown men, Hispanic men as well, are going to be the reason of whoever wins this election.
Mm-hmm. I feel personally, and I don't think this is set out there, as much as the talk about like criminal justice reform, prison reform, those things are important, I think there's an overtalk on those things for for young Black men who are enterprising. They want ways to construct their lives. It's not that they don't care.
I mean, like, are you talking to any politicians about this? Because this is like, everything you're saying
smart,
is so accurate.
Young, on the move Black men in this world who want to construct their lives. And it's not that they don't have compassion for these issues, but they feel left out when people talk about Black, they talk about us in terms of prison. And they're like, I'm sorry, but Black people are not just prisoners.
You are preaching to the choir. I mean, we want to know how we're going to make money in this economy.
Exactly. And that's that thing that Trump has had before he became political that was appealing to that energy. I'm talking about energy. I'm not talking about identity here. I'm just talking
I think you're right. Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I've always told people that, having a criminal justice plan is cool, but that ain't all you need when you talk to Black folk.
Thank you.
We are trying to increase our plight, have some economic mobility in this country, send our kids to college, raise a family.
That's right.
And this is something that Joe Biden is, as my dog goes crazy again, my wife be having, everybody come over to the house during the middle of the day.
you're going to be on a show. This is great though.
This is what Joe Biden is talking about. As my twins are going crazy, my dog's going crazy.
That's okay.
Everybody wants to know and everybody wants to talk about criminal justice when we should be also talking about Black economic mobility.
Correct. And the thing that is always, like, both of those are important. And the thing that is always talked about, and this is kind of a progressive thing too. And the thing is, progressives aren't wrong to focus on these things. I just think the picture needs to be bigger. For instance, the minimum wage. The minimum wage to me is a focus on social stability. Whereas we should also talk about empowerment issues, which focus on social mobility.
I agree.
You know, and there's not enough talk about that. It's like, yes, of course, people who are minimum wage, of course, we want them to have a living wage. But guys, we need social fucking mobility in this country because Blacks have been left out of that conversation for far too long. And
the opportunity to create wealth.
I mean, we haven't been able to participate in it properly.
It's a wealth conversation and people don't even want to have those conversations with us. Now, other demographics can have those conversations. But Hispanic Americans and Black Americans, in particular Black Americans, don't ever take part in this discussion about wealth. When we always have to...
Yeah.
We always had to fight and scream and scratch just to be a part.
And this is that lane I'm talking about. That's a growing lane with young people.
Well, there is a unique opportunity. There is a unique opportunity through COVID, which is weird to say, but the relief that will come and the way that we will attempt to economically empower people of color who've been the most devastated by COVID, there is an opportunity to participate in, and hopefully there'll be a direct infusion of capital into our communities.
Yeah, we hope so. Because like I said, all of those issues are important, but I hate when we leave out that one, you know.
I know, yeah.
You know, it's like, why are we leaving that out? Because I think it's easier for, this is a racial statement I'm going to make, but I'll just say, I just think it's easier for white people to talk about Black people in those terms. You know, I'm sorry, because I just think it's easier easier to feel sorry for us when you're talking about that, you know.
And it's always like, all right, man, just make sure they can not all of them go to jail. Yeah. Like, wait a minute, there's a lot more that we want to talk about.
Let's talk about you and I competing for the same jobs. How about
that? They're like, nah,
we don't want to talk about that.
Did you bring marijuana with you today, sir?
Exactly. All right, I really appreciate you being here, Ricardo. I know you got your hands full on the weekend here, but I do have one more question for you.
Sure.
And guys, really be sure to catch Bakari's podcast, the Bakari Sellers podcast. I mean, he is just one of the smartest guys out there. I really enjoy just seeing you on CNN as well. Who's going to win? What's your prediction?
Well, the fundamentals are a little bit different than they were in 2016. You know, in 2016, we felt comfortable about Hillary Clinton winning. But even that race was a lot closer than this one is. Mm-hmm. You know, Joe is 8-10 points nationally, which puts him in a good, comfortable position to win. Mm-hmm. I think that he may lose Florida. Florida's going to be really close. North Carolina is drifting away from Democrats, but Arizona still looks good, which you don't need. But the states that really matter in this are Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, and he looks extremely strong. I mean, he needs the election to happen sooner rather than later. And Joe Biden has to give us 4.5 strong hours. That's a lot.
Are you talking about the debates?
The debates, yeah.
Yeah, which is coming up Tuesday. It'll be interesting to see how we feel after that.
I don't know if debates, I mean, you know, debates usually never move the needle, but we're about to have like two septuagenarian white men chase each other around the stage. I mean, what do you want to see other than that, or grumpy old men on rerun on AMC? Like, I don't know.
It should be a cage match at this point, you know.
They're old.
I know. It's so true. But so is America. Actually, America's kind of young, actually, when you think about countries. All right, Bakari, really appreciate you coming on the pod today on a Saturday, sharing your kids and your dog and your family and your house.
You got it all. You got it all. Shout out to your whole team, Jonathan and Brandon and Kaya and everybody else who are part of your team.
And tell Wolf that I love him, that I'm sorry about that joke. I will be sending him a note. He probably doesn't want to hear that. He doesn't believe it.
He won't tell you. You should invite him on your show. That would be a great invite.
You say that. I don't think it will. But shout out to you, Wolf Blitzer. Keep doing what you're doing. You're great.
Thank you for having me, brother. Anytime you need anything from Bakari Sellers, you've been a great friend to me. I'm here for you.
Oh, thanks, Bakari. All right, Bakari Sellers, everybody. And remember to get his book. It's still out there. What was the name? Give us the title again.
My Vanishing Country.
Okay. You guys get that book. Okay. Thanks, Bakari.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.